Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf. It is a sunny Saturday on January the 16th, 2010, and I am your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Today I am so happy. I'm looking forward to speaking with this writer about his book. He actually has a trilogy of books, and I'm sure you're interested in tuning in as well. And the author's name, a talented writer, is Julius Thompson. Julius is the author, just to give you a little background on Julius, he is the author of the books A Brownstone in Brooklyn, Philly Style and Philly Profile, and The Ghost of Atlanta. Julius Thompson was nominated for the Georgia Author of the Year Award by the Georgia Writers Association. He has taught creative writing and publishing at Atlanta's renowned Emory University. He has worked as a featured speaker at major literary events such as the Decatur Book Festival. After the release of his book, Philly Style and Philly Profile, he traveled to the city of brotherly love, where his book is based, and he debuted his novel at one of Philadelphia's historic and oldest independent bookstores, Robbins Bookstore. Julius Thompson is online, and I encourage you to visit him at www.jtwrites.com. Again, www.jtwrites.com. Please go over there and visit Julius. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Julius. So glad to have you here with us.
I'm so glad to be here, Denise. I worked in Philadelphia for 10 to 12 years, lived in West Philly, so I really miss my cheesesteaks, my hoagies, and everything else, but I'm so glad to be here this morning.
Oh, we're so glad to have you here. So glad to have you. When you say Philly cheesesteaks, everybody knows those cheesesteaks. Philadelphia is so famously known for those. I really enjoyed researching for your interview and reading up on your own history, and I'm excited to talk about your trilogy of books. I want to talk about each of your books and your unique marketing style that you mentioned on your official website, which again is jtwrites.com. But I want to start by just saying a huge congratulations to you on the publication of your three books, and another huge congratulations on being nominated for the Georgia Author of the Year Award by the Georgia Writers Association. That is a tremendous accomplishment. Just tremendous kudos to you. I wanted to ask you, did you go to that awards event? It was at what, Kennesaw State University? And if so, could you share with us what that experience was like?
Denise, it was tremendous. It's like the Oscars. What they do is each category, they will show on the screen the book cover. And when the host will introduce each book, talk about the author. And then they will give the information why the book was picked, and they will call the authors up, but they will feature the one who won. But what it did was, it gave me recognition to know that people saw my book in a different light. And that has meant so much to me as I move forward, in my writing career.
Oh, that is so good. That's so good. Again, congratulations. That would be such an honor to be at an event like that amongst your peers and to have your work acknowledged and appreciated like that. I know you have an interesting personal history, and you said earlier that you had lived in Philadelphia for about 10 to 12 years. But an interesting, for our listeners here at Off the Shelf, Julius Thompson, he has an interesting personal history and connection to the city of Philadelphia. I know you were born in Brooklyn, New York, but you worked in Philadelphia. I read where you worked as a sports writer at the Philadelphia Bulletin. That's not familiar to me. I know a lot of periodicals come and go, and some of them they change their name. And for your work there with the Philadelphia Bulletin, you won a 1977 Associated Press Sports Editor Award, which is, again, a tremendous accomplishment. I want to ask you, what brought you from New York City? I know there's not a big distance commute from New York to Philadelphia. What brought you there to live, to move your home residence from New York City to Philadelphia? Was it the sports writing job that brought you here?
But Denise, it's interesting. When I left the City College of New York, I went to Washington, D.C., and I just could not get along with D.C. at all. I didn't get a good vibe from it. So what I did was I moved back home, and I worked as a copy boy at the New York Times. And with the New York Times, I used to write articles, unsigned articles. And an editor there from Philadelphia really, really, really liked the articles. And he told the editor in Philadelphia at the Bulletin about me. And what's unique, Denise, is I was the first black sports writer in Philadelphia. And
wow.
From that point, yes, I was the first black sports writer. And I set the tone for the writers coming in now. There were only five black sports writers at that time. I was in Philadelphia. There was someone in New York and someone in Boston. And that was it. That was it. So I was unique. I wanted to come in, and I wanted to really work hard. So when I got to Philadelphia, my aunt lives in Germantown, up on Stetton Avenue, you know, right up top.
I know where that is.
All my cousins went. Let me get a shout out to King High School. All went to Martin Luther King High School.
Okay.
And so I stayed with her, and then I started to write in 70, and I worked from 70 to 81, and I had a fantastic career. I traveled. I met different great people like Joe Bryant, Kobe Bryant's father, Gene Banks, like Sonny Hill. I can go on and on and on and on.
Okay.
And so as I was writing, I did a feature story once called The Inner City Blues on Bach High School and the effect of drugs and gangs on the school and the kids. And it ran in a major publication, a magazine outside the Bulletin. And then from that was the basis for the book Philly Style and Philly Profile. And I met a lot of recreation leaders. I met community leaders. I met people who wanted to change but had to fight different, just all kind of evil things going on. And so you know what? One day I'm going to give them their props. I'm going to give them their chance to really show that Philadelphia has people that care, that want to work, and they want to give back. And once I started, but it wasn't my first book. I had to go back further. And so I made it my second book, and it finally got published, you know, years later. But it really enriched me. It really brought back memories, and it really gave me a chance just to show that people, you know, what, no matter where you are or what you fight against, that you can really achieve and you can really, really, really grow. I got some great reviews from Philly, and the nomination was just the capping off of everything.
Well, how long were you a sports writer in the city? And did you know, were you there when Stephen A. Smith was there? Right?
No, I was there earlier. I preceded Stephen A. Smith by a few years. I was there from 70 to 81, 1981. And at that time, it was only three papers, the Philadelphia Bulletin, the Philadelphia Daily News, and the Philadelphia Inquirer, and the Tribune. And the Philadelphia Tribune was still going on now.
Okay. I get this Philadelphia Tribune. I know all three of those papers that you're referencing, and they're like major. The Philadelphia Tribune is the oldest African American newspaper in the country, and I know that the Daily News and the Philadelphia Daily News. I forget the other one, the Inquirer. They are two of the top, you know, most widely read newspapers in the city. Oh my goodness! And Philadelphia, Julius, being a huge sports town, most people know that Philadelphia is. I wanted to ask you before we go into your books because I found it interesting when I saw that you were a sports writer. What was that like for you covering sports in this absolute? The fans either love you or they don't love you. But they're very, very passionate about their sports. What was that like covering sports in the city of Philadelphia?
Denise, it was unbelievable. It probably was the best time of my life because I got to travel. I got to meet people. I got to go to great events. I was the first, when I started in Philadelphia, I was the first one. Now, Ted Solaris carried on the tradition. He's with the Philadelphia Daily News now, and Don Hunt over at the Tribune. I was the first one to interview young people, to go by the coaches and talk to the people, the young kids, to give them a voice. And it catches on. Matter of fact, I have a lot of connection in Philly now because of the stories I did. Because I was able to bring to light their stories, how they overcame, how they won, how they fought, how they had to fight through gang territory to get to school, to get to practice, how they had to work in class, how they had to just become overachievers, workers. And I just wanted to show the positive side. And I got to meet so many wonderful, wonderful people. I mean, the Gene Banks story. I knew Gene Banks, and he was one of the best ever in Philadelphia. And Joe Bryant and Mike Sojourner, and I could go on and on and on. Bob Stevens and Olney. And these people, I just in the Sunday Hill League in the summer, I was able to meet them and to tell their stories. And I had a great following. I tell you one unique thing, Denise, was I was the only high school sports writer probably in the country that had three front page high school stories.
Okay.
That really, as pre-ESPN, and that was big. I mean,
wow.
It led the paper. It led the paper. The Gene Banks story got me the national award because I got the story before anybody else in the country did. And just the excitement of Philadelphia. It was like going to work every day was like, it was just, what's going to happen next? You know,
yeah.
And it wasn't work. It was fun. It was just enjoyment.
That is so good. And, you know, it's interesting as I from Brooklyn, New York, to see your evolution toward becoming a writer. Was it always your, when you were a young boy, and you somebody would have asked you, what are you dreaming of becoming when you become a man, would you have said, I want to be a writer?
My family has always been writers and, you know, and teachers. My mother's from Statham, Georgia, Goldie Parks, and she went to Fort Valley State. She's a Delta. And she always instilled in me and my sister Rochelle that you have to achieve. She had a great saying, and it was, reach for the berries on the highest branch because they're the sweetest, and you always want to achieve the best. And she instilled in us the fact that you have to achieve. And I was young. I always wanted to tell stories. I wrote when I was young. Matter of fact, I wrote one short story that I wish I could achieve, you know, to go back and find it when I was like 15 years old.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And then when I got to Brooklyn and I went to Bushwick High School, I wrote for the newspaper. So words have always attracted me. I always read. I've been very literate. Always read James Baldwin, Ralph Ellison, all writers. And so as I matured, I wanted to express myself. Because I'm very athletically inclined, but I couldn't do it because we didn't have certain sports that I wanted, you know, like football and things in New York, so I had to go into other areas.
Okay.
So when I got to City College, I really met a professor named Professor Tashiro, and he was Japanese, and he taught Shakespeare. And he instilled in me that words convey feeling, words are what you have. And I wanted to give our people, and that's our people. I want to give African Americans, you know, a chance to know that if you have it in you, that you can become a wordsmith. You can express these ideas, and that's why I'm so happy now to see so many writers just expressing themselves. So over the years, I wanted to write, and I wrote for the school newspaper. I went to City College, wrote for their newspaper, got the opportunity to work at the New York Times, and that's where it really blossomed because at the New York Times, I worked there for 2 years as a copy boy. And I saw so many wonderful, wonderful writers, encouragement, people who were great craftsmen in their field would spend hours working with me, you know, in the evenings after the paper was put to bed, which means the paper was finished. And they instilled in me, you write. I had a great high school teacher, Miss Egan, and I was a little nervous, and I said, I want to write. And she just said two words to me, and I never looked back. And she said, do it.
Oh, my goodness. Thank God for those people in our lives. Thank God for those people in our lives, rather than those who tell us all the obstacles we might come up against, how hard it might be, the statistics that show how hard it is. Thank God for the people that just say, do it. They just don't, they have no fear. They're courageous people, and they just say, do it, rather than tell you all the hard things you might come up with that you try to do it. And I encourage our listeners here at Off the Shelf to be the people who, rather than quote statistics and obstacles, just encourage people and be courageous and encourage them to go after their dreams. I want to talk about your books, the trilogy of Brownstone in Brooklyn, Philly Style and Philly Profile, and The Ghost of Atlanta. What wonderful titles. This trilogy, for our listeners here at Off the Shelf, it lets you follow the twists and turns in the life of a guy by the name of Andy Michael Pilgrim. And before we start this, I got to tell you, as I'm preparing for the interview, I'm sitting here looking at this name. What the last name Pilgrim just jumped out at me. Does that name have a special significance in the story, this guy's last name?
Yes, it is. And by being a writer, did you know that when I wrote the name, it was a friend of my sister's family's name, Pilgrim. And so I liked the name. But even I, sometimes when you write and you put things down, you really don't get the significance of it. So I was at an event, and an elderly lady came to me and said, you know what? I'm glad you picked that name because that's a 30-year journey. That's a pilgrimage. And that's where the name came from. It's a journey through life. And so it really fits it perfectly because it's a journey. And a pilgrimage is a journey, twists and turns, ups and downs, you know, positive, negative. And this just absolutely it hit the nail on the head. Excuse me. It hit the nail on the head. And I really, you know, I just wanted something that captures the reader's imagination.
How old is Andy at the start of a brownstone in Brooklyn? And what are some of the challenges and the good times that he experiences in the first book of your trilogy?
Okay. Andy is a college senior, which means like early 20s.
Okay.
What I wanted to show was that at Brooklyn at the time in the 60s, it was a time of change. It was a time of growth. Bedford-Stuyvesant was just an incredible place. You know, that was a life force. And, you know, people traveled from Brooklyn to Harlem, and it was right before the Civil Rights Movement.
Okay.
And as it started to really get going. Mm-hmm. And the challenge for Andy was there was two voices in the Civil Rights Movement. You had the extreme other side, Malcolm X. You had that more, you know, different, and you had King. And that was one challenge he faced. And then being in the neighborhood, there was the emergence. You start at the very beginning of the drug culture, very beginning of gangs coming into play. So, and you had that pulling against him. Go on the stupid, we used to call it in Brooklyn, and you could just smell our favorite fragrance from the weed out there. And the choice was, do I or don't I?
Yeah.
And then you have battles going on. And I want to show how this young man faced these battles. But in African-American communities at that time, you were not alone. It was a family. It was people surrounding you. It was the people in your block, the people in your brownstone that encouraged you, that pushed you. And you were raised by more than just your mom and your dad. You were raised by the extended family,
Right,
When I did brownstone, Denise, I got a great review from someone who grew up in Milwaukee, and he said the same thing. He said, you hit a note because this happens in a lot of African-American communities at the time. You had people that were encouragers that pushed you towards your goal. And so this young man faced challenges, but it was not alone. And he made good choices. He also made some bad choices. But what kept him going along was the people surrounding him. And that's the thing I think we're missing today, kind of. We're missing those people who surround us, who can, like you said earlier, who can encourage us to fight through situations, to don't let nothing pull us back or hold us back, that, you know, that you got some support there. And that was what I wanted to do in Brownstone, was to show that we are a people who encourage each other, we are people who push each other, and we want a people who want to make sure that we achieve our goal. And I wanted to show that, you know, in the Brownstone in Brooklyn.
Okay, so this, I was going to ask you that. Andy's family background, it sounds like he has a solid, stable family background. So coming into the story, he's graduated from college. He has a supportive family. He's not coming from like a seriously dysfunctional home. That's my take so far, and correct me if I'm wrong. And I wanted to add, go ahead.
Yes, one thing about, he's raised by a stepfather, not his father, his stepfather.
Okay.
That's important because the stepfather was a man who showed what a man can do. Even though it wasn't his children, he came in and became a man. And
okay.
That's where he learned to become a man from, is that his was dysfunctional in a certain sense, but it was stabilized because he had a strong mother, then another strong male figure, which was that stepfather.
Okay. So it's good to see that there was a strong male in his family for him to model after. Other than Andy, who are some of the other characters that readers will meet in A Brownstone in Brooklyn? If you could just tell us a little bit briefly about those pivotal characters.
In A Brownstone in Brooklyn, he has a stepfather, which is Mobbs, and he is a cab driver in New York, and he works hard to make sure. And he's, you know, one of the things he told Andy was that, you know, if you want to achieve a goal, I'll help you achieve your goal. And that means getting out 3 in the morning, driving a cab in New York City, making money to come back. But the Brownstone in Brooklyn, Denise, is not funny. The minor characters are one that really people really love. And even though they lived in the Brownstone around Andy, you had people like Mother Nature, and they all had crazy names, like Mother Nature, friends of Andy's mother, Sister Love, Sweet Thing, all these people. And what they did was they were characters, and they did some positive and negative things, but they were an influence, and they were encouragers. And even though Andy knew what they did wrong, he knew to take the positive from what they said and not the negative. And the readers, I've got a great feedback from readers because they love the minor characters because they're always up to something, always doing something. We all have our Mother Natures in our house. One of the funny things was Andy's coming home, and Mother Nature's had one or two drinks, and she's from New Orleans,
uh-huh.
And she's going up the steps. And so she loses something. So Andy picks it up and walks up to the door and knocks on and gives it to her. And it's her wig.
And, oh, God.
And Andy said, Mother Nature, here's your hair. And she said, oh, yeah, thank you. You know, I just bought it and I got to keep it off.
Oh, boy. I wanted to ask you, this was one of the comments posted at your official website. Again, Julius Thompson. The author of A Brownstone in Brooklyn, Philly Style and Philly Profile, and The Ghost of Atlanta, he's online. Please stop over and visit him. He's at www.jtwrites, that's spelled W-R-I-T-E-S, www.jtwrites.com. I wonder, at your website, this is what one reviewer had to say about A Brownstone in Brooklyn, the first book of Andy's, first book of Julius' trilogy. And he says, I have just finished Julius Thompson's book, A Brownstone in Brooklyn. I was impressed with how Mr. Thompson was able to take me back to my own childhood and evoke the small but intricate community that helped to shape my own hopes, dreams, challenges, and fears. His use of music interwoven through the text helped to fix firmly the year and time in which this story unfolds. That review piqued my interest in Andy's life. And I wanted to ask, did you grow up in the area where the story takes place? And are some of the shops and the houses and the community spots still there in Brooklyn today?
Yes, it is. And what it is, my books are what I call a realistic fiction. And what I do, Denise, is I take realistic places. You could go to Brooklyn and go right to 48th and Woodland. You can go to Marcy Park, and everything is still there. But I take fictional characters and I put them in realistic situations and realistic places, hence the three cities, because I want the people to get that feel for what it was like. And that reviewer I talked to on the phone one time, and he said, what I did was I used music in all my books. In Brownstone in Brooklyn, one of the songs I use is the Drifters Up on the Roof.
Okay.
And the significance is, in the end, you see Andy up on the roof. And it's a way of, if you know the words of the song, you know, above the trouble, above
mm-hmm.
what's going on below.
Mm-hmm.
And it fits perfectly. And I tried to use, like in the 70s, I used, it was a song that Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, if you don't know me by now.
Okay.
And he's from Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. And the song from Denise Williams I used in The Ghost of Atlanta. And what I wanted to do with this trilogy was to give the reader a sense of what it was like to grow up in the 60s and the 70s and 80s in the African-American community with this backdrop of all these great events going on. There was real people. Like in Brownstone in Brooklyn, you're there and you know what the riots went on after King was killed. You know all the things going on, but what was going on with the common people? What was going on with the people with these events? So it's like they're revolving around this community, and you can just see how they influence what's going on. So what I wanted to do was to give the reader a sense of place, a sense of time, and I used the music and I used events to fuel and to push the characters into different situations, personal as well as the bigger situations that were facing each one of them.
Okay. I want to ask you next, does A Brownstone in Brooklyn, does this book end on a cliffhanger, being that it's the first in a book of a trilogy? And is Andy, is he already living in Philadelphia? Well, first of all, let me ask you that question. Does the book A Brownstone in Brooklyn, does it end on a cliffhanger? What would cause the reader to want to pick up the next part of the trilogy and continue reading his story?
Because at the end of the book, it's some scenes that go on that I won't totally give away, but it's some real good scenes where he overcomes and he's leaving. He's leaving Brooklyn. And the last thing the reader hears, you know, reads was, wow, he's going. What's happening next? Where he's going? What he will be doing? So it is kind of a cliffhanger. You want to read on to see what happens next in his life. Where is he headed? What kind of adventures he's going to face as he's moving to the new city? And Brownson actually ended with Andy going to Washington. And what I did was it's a character he meets going down to, and you meet when he first in the middle of the book when he decides to go to Washington to work. There is a character he meets called Mother Thomas, and she's from Philadelphia. He meets her on the train going to D.C., and they talk about Philadelphia. And he said, you know, you're a good young man. We need someone like you to become a role model for our young people in Philadelphia. Why don't you come write in Philadelphia sometime? So when he gets to Philadelphia, he meets Mother Thomas again, and she helps him out there. And Mother Thomas comes up again in Atlanta. So it's kind of a thread to go through all the books.
Okay, it sounds interesting. Is Andy living in, you said, at the end of the Brownstone Brooklyn, he's heading to D.C. Is he living in Philly at the start of Philly style and Philly profile? And I've got to ask you this. Do you see bits and pieces of your own life interweaved in Andy's story?
I do. I see bits and pieces of it. And I see little things here, little things there. But even though the events are fictional, some of the emotions I see, some of the turmoil I've seen in the characters. And one thing I found out that is when you write, it brings up emotions, it brings up events that you think was covered up long ago, but they come out. Believe me, they come out.
that's one of the blessings of writing for the author. And for the reader when they connect, and it brings up emotions in them from something they thought was long gone. So I was curious, is he in Philadelphia at the start of?
Yes, he is. It's funny, in Philadelphia now, and when you get to Philly style, it does open with Andy. He's in Philadelphia writing for the Bulletin. Now, he's been there a couple of years. And the book actually opens up with a prologue, which is an event that happened 4 years earlier. And it opens on the and you love this, on the Market Street L.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it opens up on the Market Street L with the character going to Upper Darby. And actually, the main scene takes place in Norristown. So, I mean, it's all about Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
And that happens 4 years earlier. And I did this because in writing books, I found that my first chapter did not get that oomph and grab the reader like I wanted to. So I came up with the prologue, and it just tied everything together. It just jump-started together. And so I got an epilogue in it. So I was able to get a prologue and an epilogue in Philly. But it brings the reader right into Philadelphia. I mean, when you read Philly style, you're just going to – reason I do certain scenes and certain music is I want to place the reader in the context of the place. You're not here in 2000. You're back in Philadelphia in the 70s.
Okay.
You're on Broad Street. You're walking into Reading Terminal and you're smelling the foods, the stalls, the scenes. You're walking up South Street. You know, you're in North Philly, right near Temple and McGonagall Hall. And all these are in the book. It's when you read Philly, you're in Philadelphia. You know you're in Philadelphia with the way this character speaks, with the music, and the events just pop and flow. Because in Brownstone, it takes place over like a year and a half, the novel. In Philly, it takes place in a weekend. It's a weekend.
Oh, okay. Now, the Brownstone is in the 60s. Philly style, Philly profile. Andy, I'm assuming, is now in his 30s, and this takes place in the 70s?
Yes, late 20s now.
Oh, he's in his late 20s. Okay.
Going to the early 30s. Late 20s, early, yeah, yes.
You mentioned the one woman that he meets in D.C. who tells him he should come to Philly and have a positive impact on the people there, and then he also meets her in The Ghost of Atlanta. She's there. Who are some of the other people that come into his life in Philly style and Philly profile.
Well, and Philly, you have Mr. C and Mr. Clinton. And he's, if you're doing Philly, you have recreations, you know, all over the place, like the Shepherd Recreation Center, all over the place. And you have the Cecil B. Moore Recreation Center. And these were recreation leaders. So he's a big influence on the kids. And then you have a basketball player who is in Philly. And you have all the editors, all the people he meets as he writes books, as he moves out in the community. So Philly is just a myriad of different characters, different places, different people. And because he's been a sports writer, he gets to dip in. He can go and cover a game and be in North Philly in the afternoon and go cover a game in Lower Merion at night. So he was able to just to meet people. And the influence they had. He could see the difference in people. He could see the conflicts coming. And in Philly, what I wanted to show was, even though all this was going on, that Andy fought through this. Andy was able to help someone. Actually, he takes a little back step in Philly because I wanted him to be like the one that ties everything together. And in this weekend, this young man, and because this event that happened, is scheduled to be killed. And what Andy does is they help the young man get through the weekend and get him out and get him on a plane to go into his college before it happens. And what I like about this, Denise, is in Philly, I wrote about this in the 70s, and it's the same thing happening today. There was a deadly shooting in Philly, and I think about in 2009, about this young basketball player was killed out in West Philadelphia. The same thing happened. A football player got killed like in the early 2000s. And athletes have a history of that going on in Philly. When I was there, gang, you kill athletes all the time. So what I'm saying is that Philly was able to show that if we don't do something, if we don't stop this, it's going to continue. You know, we got to really, really, and I want to show it in a way, in a novel form, that if we work together as a community, that we can stop this, because my affections for Philly are deep.
Yeah, I can tell from when I hear you talk about Philly, the places that you're mentioning in Philadelphia, Norristown, you're talking about Stinton Avenue over in Mount Airy, Germantown, just the places that you're referencing during the interview. I know you definitely you had to live in Philadelphia to know the things that you're saying.
Yes.
You have to live in Philadelphia, Darby, Marion, the places that you're mentioning, and the people that you're mentioning. Do you cover any historic events that happened in Philadelphia that had a national impact, other than the one you just mentioned? And if so, if you could just tell us about one of those events briefly.
And
if you cover any historic events.
In Philadelphia, I was there during the move. You know, with the move controversy.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And that's mentioned in the book just a little bit, but it's mentioned because a writer did a book called Philadelphia Fire, a novel, which is excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. And so I was there doing it. But see, here's the thing I did, Denise. I was in sports. So most of the things going on at the time, I was dealing with the sports end.
Okay.
And so now, in Brownstone, now, when I was a cop boy at the New York Times, I was there doing the Pentagon Papers.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was there in the news floor when all the people from the, you know, from the Pentagon and the big and all were walking through the New York Times. And they told me I had to carry up some papers upstairs at the New York Times one time doing this controversy, and they wouldn't tell me what it was, but I assumed that it was the Pentagon Papers.
Wow.
Because I was a copy boy, because they had a copy boy, a copy editor, and a reporter working together.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And I didn't realize the day at the time that they wouldn't tell me what it was, but now I put two and two together.
Yeah, you're like, I was holding on to something pretty, pretty important.
I think a little history
so
there.
I wonder they didn't tell you, you know, just get this guy and just somebody who doesn't know and won't say nothing and let him do it. And in the last book in the trilogy, The Ghost of Atlanta, is he still running? Now, when I read your website, it sounds like he's running from something, and I don't want you to give the story away by any means.
Right.
I think the cities that each of these stories are set in, the time periods that these stories are set in, the way you weave in the community, historic events, and the music so that people can actually feel like they're there is strong enough to carry this story. But I do remember reading at your website, you said he was, there was something that happened in New York. It seemed like he was running from something. I wanted to ask you, what if that is so, was he still running from something that all the way from New York to Georgia?
Now, what happened was in Philadelphia was at the time, the Bulletin was closing, and it closed around, so he had to find another job. So in finding another job, he would move back to Atlanta where his family was from. His family was from, you know, his mother and his sister and everything. And he was raised from the time he was little in New York, but he was actually born in Georgia. Now, this is where the stepfather comes in, you know, and this is where the father comes in. So he's back in Georgia. His mother didn't want to go back to Georgia because she knew all what was going on, because she never really talked about what happened, you know, in Georgia, why she left Georgia, you know, why she came to Brooklyn.
Okay.
And so now the ghost of Atlanta, it will be, when he comes back, as a matter of fact, when I was at the Decatur Book Festival, we had a panel called The Ghost in the Crawl Space. And my ghost was the ghost in your mind. You know, the crawl spaces of people's lives. There are some supernatural illusion, because when he gets to Georgia, he meets a cousin called Joe Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And first time I ever did this, and it's a character, Denise, that you don't know whether is he real.
Is he
supernatural? Because he does things, and I weave that throughout the book. So when Andy gets to Georgia, he has got to face his past. He's got to go to the small town where his family is from.
Mm.
And he's got to meet what happened. Why is everybody on edge? What is going on with the property? Why he gets this creepy feeling when he goes back to the property?
Okay.
And it's more than just ghosts. It's cousins. It's people trying to get money, and it's some drugs, and you know, and money situations that's coming up. But what I like about the ghost, it ties everything together, because he's mature. He gets to Atlanta, and he stays at a place, and Mother Thompson helps him get the place. She's still in Philadelphia now, but she is the one that he calls and talks to. And she's there when something, when a big incident happens in his life. And you know that he had a love interest in Brooklyn. And she resurfaces in Atlanta. And it's a love situation going on between him and his old girlfriend. And something happens to her in Atlanta. And what interesting was that in my church, I had these two old couple, 85 each. They read the Bronson in Brooklyn. And he looked at me after he read the book. He said, he met this wonderful girl. Now, listen to me. I know writers. Don't you kill that girl now.
Oh, my God.
He said, don't you kill that girl. The wife said, don't you kill her now. He needs her. Don't you kill her now.
Oh, my goodness. The books, it's each of the stories hold their own. And the fact that the reader can follow Andy's life and his experiences through so many different cities and so many, and just being in a different city, different people are going to come into your life, and different events is just amazing. I wanted to ask you, is the last book in the trilogy, The Ghost of Atlanta, is it out in bookstores yet? And if not, when will it be available for readers to pick it up?
It's not out in bookstores yet. It'll be out later this year.
Oh, okay, later in 2010. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
It's 2010. Right. It's right ready. And the thing with publishers, they tell you it's coming out, and you know, when we're getting to talk about the publishers a bit, they tell you it's coming out, but they come out when they want to come out with it. You know,
yeah,
and that's what's frustrating about it. You know, it's coming out, but they say, we'll let you know.
Yeah, but the good thing is you can start promoting it. So when it comes out, people will just be waiting at the ready to find out more about Andy and what happens to him and the people in his life and the people around him. I wanted to ask you, Julius, have you found that writing a trilogy, have you found that it helps you build a readership, which, in other words, somebody reads A Brownstone in Brooklyn and they, oh, my God, I like this Andy guy. I want to know what's going to happen to him. He's going to D.C. and blah, 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 blah. And then they go and they get Philly style and Philly profile. Then they want to know what's going to happen to him next. And you just keep building the readers who enjoy the first book. They continue to read each of the books about the character. But you also, they go tell other people, you got to read this book, you got to read this book. And you build your readership. Have you found, has that been your experience of writing a trilogy, that it helps you to build, you know, the people who are interested in reading your books?
Yes, Denise, it does. What happened was now people want to read what happens next, how he developed, how he matured. And, you know, for being a writer, the tricky part of doing a trilogy is you got to write each one different, but yet they have to have some connection. It can be read independently, but also they can be read in order. And that was the tricky part. And what this has done, Denise, he's really, really given me an opportunity to delve deeper into a character. Now, I tell you right now, there will be no more trilogies because I started to write the first word.
Oh, that's funny.
No more. I started writing the trilogy in 1995.
I tell you right now, there'll be no more trilogies. Okay.
I started writing in 1995, and I ended the last word in 2006. I said, that's it. No more.
Oh.
11 years.
Wow.
And it's amazing over the years. Now, I learned as far as marketing. I learned from Brownstone. I didn't know nothing, anything. And I almost lost the book because I didn't start marketing until I got the book. But I learned over the years how, you know, that's why each book is built on the next book. And now I'm able to catch up. I had to take almost a year off and travel and do things to get this book, get the momentum going again. You know, and I learned about marketing and promotion and, you know, and the angles of publishing and all those different things that really has really pushed me to a whole new level.
Wow, I wanted to ask you, did you intend, before I go on to my next question, did you intend to make Andy's story a trilogy from the start, or was that something that just happened on his own?
No. It was going to be one book.
Oh.
One book. And I wrote the book, and I'm going to tell you a little secret. I wrote Philly first. Philly was actually written first.
Oh, okay.
And but then I realized this is not the first. This is not the beginning. This is not the beginning. There is something before Philly. So I went back and wrote Brownstone.
Well, you know what? I got to commend you, Julius, that you saw as a writer that, you know, this isn't right. A lot of times as an artist, if you get too connected to your story, whether an editor or a reader or somebody says, you know what, it might be better if you do it a different way, a lot of us won't be willing to go back and make that change. And I do commend you for doing that, to make sure that the story feels right to you as the creator of the story. So I commend you on that. I also at your official website, again, to our listeners here at Off the Shelf, we're speaking with Julius Thompson. He's the author of the books Brownstone and Brooklyn, Philly Style and Philly Profile, and I love that title, and The Ghost of Atlanta. I encourage you to visit Julius online. He's at www.jtwrites, and that's jtwrites.com. Again, www.jtwrites.com. At your official website, you talk about this undercover marketing. And I got to tell you, when I was reading about your marketing, I had to laugh. You I understand where you're coming from and where you put in the part where you put in your budgeting, your marketing budget. It was just, you're very, candid or forthright. It was just funny to me, but I definitely understood where you were coming from. I guess the way you said it was funny to me. That said, I wanted to ask you, have you found that not having as much of those financial resources, because I can tell you that a lot of times you can pump millions of dollars into something and it still doesn't work. So you have to do what works. Have you found that not having those millions of dollars to market your books has caused you to become more creative from a business standpoint?
It does. I become more savvy. And what happened is I looked at a book called 1,001 Ways to Market Your Book, and it has one little phrase that I use every day, and it's called the rule of five. And the rule of five means I would do five things every day to promote my book. Because a good friend of mine named Bill Foster taught me when I was writing for a newspaper. He was a coach at Northwestern. He says, the funny thing happens when you don't promote nothing. That's the truth. That's the truth. And so,
that's funny.
This is the funniest thing in the world. And I tell people, you've got to promote. You got to work.
Oh, goodness.
You got to work, Denise. You got to get out there and you got to promote. So what I do is, when, for example, in Georgia, we have the Georgia Center for the Book, and they have a great, great author events almost every week. And so I went to this event, and take example of what I do, and I have my, you know, and I go to like online and get business cards, postcards, have all kind of little stuff about my books. So I go to the event, talk to people, and meet the author. And then when I was there, they had, nobody realized, they had a reception for the author at one of the big hotels in Decatur, Georgia. So everybody went to the event, was invited. This is all free now.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up there. I met publishers, and I met other writers, other authors. I met my editor, because she edited the Ghost of Atlanta, and she did a fantastic job. And so I was able to make connections and to network. When I Pearl Cleave, who's a great writer, had an event, and I went there, and I talked to her, and I met the director of the Decatur Library. And Brownson & Brooks is in libraries in Atlanta, Fulton County, Chicago, New York, and in the L.A. area. It's in the library system already. And so I met people, make connections. So you have got to, as a writer with a zero budget, you've got to take advantage of everything. When you're in a line at Kroger's, you got to talk to people, or Acme in Philadelphia. You've got to take your business card with you everywhere. And you never know. I've met people who, all of a sudden, I've sold 4 and 5 books because they got interested. I gave them stuff. And so you got to build this swell. And I've been doing this for years. And the problem with a zero budget is you can't do it a splash, you know. And that's why I was so honored when you had me on your program, because it gives me a chance to tell people that, you know, you got to get your book and you got to work for your book. Another great author, Denise, his name is Ashanti White.
Okay.
And she does Chasing Eden, and we talk a lot. And we talk a lot, and we do the same thing. We have to work, and you have to figure out ways. What I also do, Denise, is I will take, I will save money because the mortgage got to be paid. I will
save money.
I will save money, and I will do one event a year where I travel to different cities, and I will, you know, and sell. When I came to Philly 2 years ago, which you mentioned earlier, I went to New York. I came up on the train, and I spent those 3 days, I don't think I slept, and my feet killed me. And when I got back on that train, I slept back to the Atlanta. When I left 33 Station, I was tired, and I walked. I met people. I taught people. I went to bookstores. I went to Creative Arts Fair, Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn. And you know, that was a great event. When I went back to Brooklyn for the Creative Arts Fair, it was in Bed-Stuy, in the area where the book is written, and I was talking. It's outside with all the brownstones in the streets, and the people were fascinated because this is what I'm writing about. It's a strange feeling when you're there. This is what I'm writing about right here, you know. And so, then I came to Philly, you know, and then the Robbins bookstore. This is what I write about right here. And then I met, you know, some good advertising people, you know, and I made contacts, and I just worked and worked. And you got to work.
Yeah,
I agree.
You are so right, Julius. I do agree. I don't care if you are self-published or independently published. You go to a small publisher or a large mainstream publisher. You got to get out there and hit that pavement. And you have to. Some things work, I will say, and some things may work for some writers and not others. So you have to find out what works for you. I wouldn't recommend pouring a ton of money into something.
No.
Because
no.
The person selling the marketing, they're going to tell you it's going to work. You're going to sell a gazillion books or whatever. But you have to just test the waters, find out for you what works for your particular book and what doesn't work. And you'll know right away what's bringing in the sales and something you might pump hundreds of hours and lots of dollars into, and you only sell 2 books. You know that's not working. So
no.
What works for you and what doesn't work for you? At some low marketing budget, I find doing internet radio interviews that you can do from home so you don't have to have that traveling expense. And something for you, because you were in newspapers, reaching out to newspapers and asking that they do book reviews on your titles.
Yes.
Joining network groups, like I know I have the Book Lovers Haven. There are others, the Nubian Literary Network, Onyx Woman Network for women who are business into business. We Are Greater Than I, that's another independent artist group. And these are free to join, and professionals join these. and attending large events. I find that attending large events helps me to move a lot of books, but you made a good comment. They often charge a vendor fee, so you got to look at your budget and say, how many of these can I afford to go to? And then also, if you do say I'm going to travel out of town, like you said, you say I'm going to line up at least five bookstore signings while I'm there. I'm going to go on at least 3 to 5 radio shows while I'm there. You just get the most out of that money that you can. So I agree with you. You got to get creative. What can I do on the internet? What can I do off the internet? And start really hustling to get those books out. I would imagine, though, for you, though, Julius, that being a newspaper writer, a former newspaper writer, you have contacts that you could reach out to that could they would know you. So they would say, oh, yeah, sure, Julius, we'll do a so that is helpful for you, I would imagine.
It does help me, Denise. What happened was, see, I know like Peter Vesey, who's on ESPN, and, you know, he's got a copy of the book and reading it. He's probably going to do something soon. And for like this upcoming year, what I did was I'm going early this year. I was incredibly blessed because the Virginia Festival of the Book has picked me to be one of the featured authors.
Congratulations.
And what I did was, Denise, since I was going to be in Virginia March 24th, then I got a call, and I'm going to be in Philadelphia, at the Roxborough Library March 24th, talking about Billy Stiles, on Wednesday. And so I put those together. Now I'm going to get one in D.C. So therefore, when I move that time, I'll be in Charlottesville, Virginia, and then I'll be in D.C., and then I'll be in Philadelphia. And so I make the more bang for the buck. I make the contacts. I meet people. You know, and then, you know, and that's what I do. Now, I probably won't do anything the rest of the year, but for that one time frame, I was able to push it a little further, push it a little further, and push it a little further. And those are the things you have to do. Once you get one thing, you've got to figure out another way. How can I add to this? How can I develop this? How can I move it further? I got a great article in the Southwest Philly Review about Philly Style, and because it's from that area, so I knew people there. So, that, you know, they got a great article about, you know, how the story takes place on the Southwest Philly corner. And they did other little things. Ted Solaris helped me out. He on his website for the Daily News, he, you know, he pushes the book. You know, he talks to people for me.
Oh, good for you, Julius. I'm happy to hear that.
Thank you. And what it means, Denise, but you've got, and the key thing, Denise, for us, I think, is we've got to work. We've got to get our work ethic. You know, we, as African Americans, we got to work and work and work and work. And we have stories to tell. And I'm the only one. I mean, there are people who got some unbelievable stories that they can tell, but we got to get people, encourage them to make, you know, to express themselves, you know, come to realize that you can do it.
Yes.
You can do it.
Yeah, absolutely, Julius. I second that so much. We're talking to a wonderful, talented author, Julius Thompson, who is the author of the books A Brownstone in Brooklyn, Philly Style and Philly Profile, and The Ghost of Atlanta. And he's going to be in Philadelphia March 24th at the Roxborough Library. He's also going to be in Virginia and in some other areas, some other places in the area. Very a smart marketer, former sports writer for the Philadelphia Bulletin, and has also been in worked with the New York Times and some other major periodicals. So please visit Julius online at www.jtwrites.com, and that's JTWRITS.com. Go over there and check out his books, A Brownstone in Brooklyn, Philly Style and Philly Profile, and The Ghost of Atlanta. As we come down to the last 6 minutes of this interview that I have enjoyed so, so much, I wanted to ask you if you could just tell us what it was like, because you've had so many experiences teaching creative writing and publishing at Emory University. Emory is well respected. I actually spoke there, I've spoken there before. What was it like teaching that course, creative writing and publishing, at Emory, Julius?
It's been unbelievable, Denise. I started the course at Emory six years ago. I had one class called Creative Writing 1. And this year, they came to me in the summer, and they're going to have a certificate program for creative writing. And they're going to use, my class has gone from one class, two classes, three classes, now to four classes. And it's going to be an integral part. And I feel so good. And all the people I've helped over the years. A matter of fact, one of the young ladies I helped 2 years ago, she came to the class, hadn't written a word. And I helped her, showed her how to get organized, how to develop herself. And she published her book this year called Essay in Progress.
Essie in Progress?
Yes, so she's one of the people who came in with nothing, and now she's published, Essie in Progress.
Oh, congratulations.
And it feels so good. You see somebody, she was so happy, and she came in with not one word. And the thing I try to steal in the Emory kids is, number one, enthusiasm. Number two, you got to stick to it. And the discipline to write. You've got to, no matter how you feel. You know, I know we work all day. Some of you have children. You work all day. You do different things. But when you, if you have this part you don't want to write, you have got to write, and you've got to do it. And no matter what, no matter, you've got to get your writing routine down. And it's a three-part course, Creative Writing 1, Workshop 1, Workshop 2, Workshop 3, where we advance and you know, and progress with it. And then the last one is the publishing part, where we talk about what it is to find the publisher. Whether you want to self-publish it, what do you want to do? Do you want to go, you know, you want to find, how to find a publisher, how to make sure that you're not taken in, what are the things you have to do? And there's absolutely nothing wrong with self-publishing, because that book, Who Moved My Cheese, changed all that. It changed all that. Because remember, he self-published, and then all of a sudden, he went to New York, and he got an agent, and he was a millionaire.
And he's not the only one. There are other people
who have done
well doing that. You've lived in three different states.
Yes.
Which obviously tells me that you are not adverse to change. And
no.
It's odd that you would just mention Who Moved My Cheese, which is a book about dealing with change. How do you think this mindset, just listening to you talk, you're teaching, you come up with this writing course, and it just grows. We're a newspaper writer. You've lived in New York, Washington, D.C., actually more than three states.
Yes.
Pennsylvania and Georgia. So I wanted to ask you this mindset where you're open to change, and we only have 3 minutes left. How do you see that this serves you well as a writer?
It gives me experiences, Denise. You have to love people. Sometimes, Denise, I go out and I just watch people. I get a cup of coffee and I just watch people, listen to the way they speak, how they interact with each other. And it just shows you how you – because to me, to be a writer, and this is the key to writing, is you have to have great characters. Every great book has a great character that you know. You mentioned Andy Michael Pilgrim in my trilogy. Every book has to have a great character that the reader cares about, from the classics all the way up, you know, from Jane Austen all the way to Walter Mosley, E.Z. Rollins. And so I by traveling, I meet people, and I've seen some great, great people that, you know, I say, wow, that would be a great character. Sometimes I laugh. I said, wow, that would be a great character to my deep down inside to myself.
Right.
But so it, just traveling and this meeting, and it's broadened my mind. For example, I tell people, I'm just as comfortable going to Statham, Georgia, where there's a one stoplight, going to that little black cafe, and that afternoon take a plane and be in New York, and I could be in the Village. Or
wow,
I can go to Philly and have a cheesesteak, in Reading Terminal. So I just found it fascinating that, you know, and that I would not trade anything, you know, not trade anything. As I say, my years in Philadelphia was absolutely the best. One quick story. You know, Philosophy the Profile was not the original title. The title was A Murder on Market Street, right? So my editor, in the book, I used the phrase in a section called, you know, Philly is different, because I would say Philadelphia is totally different than any place I ever lived. I say it's got its own style and its profile. I call it Philly style and Philly profile. And Ed called me and said, "Dum dum, that's your title, Philly style and Philly profile."
Oh, interesting. Thanks so much for sharing that here with us here at Off the Shelf. We only have a minute left, and I could go on and on and on with you. I have so enjoyed. You have a wonderful spirit, such a talented and gifted writer, and an open person who I really have enjoyed speaking with today. I encourage you to go over to his website, jtwrites.com, easy to remember, jtwrites.com, and learn more about his books. purchase his books and read and enjoy Andy Pilgrim's story, A Brownstone in Brooklyn, Philly Style and Philly Profile, and The Ghost of Atlanta, the last of his trilogies. He will be, Julius Thompson, will be in Philadelphia on March 24th at the Roxborough Library, and he'll be in Virginia and other locations in the surrounding area. We so enjoyed you today, Julius. I cannot thank you enough for being here with us. Next week we will bring to you Rachel Berry here at Off the Shelf. She is the author of the book Family Pictures. I encourage you, please go check out my website, www.chistel.com, C-H-I-S-T-E-L-L.com, and pick up a copy of my new book, Long Walk Up. You can get it at the website, at Amazon.com, Borders, Barnes & Noble, or at any bookstore if you don't see it on the bookstore shelves. The same as with Andy's books. Just ask the clerk, the cashier, to get you a copy of it, which you can get through the major distributors. Thank you so much for being here with us at Off the Shelf again. I want you to always remember that you are so valued, truly loved, and incredibly blessed. I thank you for being here with me. Goodbye for now.
Thank you.
Andy, I'll shoot you an email.